From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present the second half of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank talked with ethicist Benjamin Weicker about a number of critical issues, including natural law and pornography. Well, let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Benjamin Weicker.
There's a word that you use, and I don't know if you coined the word hyperpalatability. Talk about that word, what it means, and how it relates to, let's say, the Lay's commercial, you just can't eat one of these. Or
you can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't coin it. It took me a long time to learn to spell it, actually. I couldn't figure out. But in the literature, it's an actual scientific term. And it refers to, you know, the level of palatability is the fact that food tastes good, and so you want to eat it. And that's not something that is just intrinsic to human beings. You know, all the animals that eat something like what they eat. That is, it tastes good to them. And if it didn't, they wouldn't eat it. So it's a way to get us to eat. It's a built-in way to get us to eat, and your taste sensation realizes when something is palatable for you. So palatability is a good thing. Now, what's happened is that human beings have been able to create hyperpalatability. That is, a taste that is so incredibly intense that it's literally unnatural and goes beyond what you would find in any kind of a natural food. And then it removes the nutritional substrate. Like, it's all taste and no nutrition. Whereas an apple is palatable, a good one, not these awful ones you sometimes get from the supermarket, but a good apple, it tastes good and it is good. So the nutrition and the tastiness are united. Well, we figured out, clever folks that we are, how to take the tastiness out of it and then intensify it beyond a natural level so that, again, it quite literally it takes hold of our pleasure system in our brain and causes us to crave that super intense, hyper-palatable taste. So when you say, gosh, I just have to have a brownie or whatever it is, it is really a kind of addiction because of what it does to the pleasure center of your brain. And so that's what the industries are trying to do, to get you to want to eat or drink as much of their product as possible. And they know also that because they're generally lacking in nutrition, you won't get full. That is, the part of your brain that says, ah, I finally got my nutrition, says, well, you've eaten a whole bag of Doritos, but I still need my nutrition. And our response is, well, I guess I'll eat another bag of Doritos, you know, and you're not getting anywhere. So you're getting all taste and no nutrition. And again, they're morally responsible for having done that. And no other animal has that capacity. All the other animals eat what is good for them, and hence you don't see them waddling around, barely unable to walk, unless they get a relationship to human beings and start eating the hyperpalatable food. But this hyperpalatability is a principle that is also used in pornography. It's also used on the internet. That is, make the images so that you can't not click on them. So a lot of flashing images, you know, a lot of sexual images and so on. Something so that human beings, you know, the pleasure center, wants another hit. So what we've done is we have violated natural goodness by trying to take the pleasant aspect of our nutrition out of its natural context and just focus on getting as much pleasure as possible. Now, again, that violates the virtue of temperance. Temperance is trying always to unite your desire for pleasure with what's actually good for you. And what we have done is we made a set of industries that make enormous amounts of money, knowing they are harming us, by the vice of intemperance in regard to food, or if we want to talk about pornography, in regard to sexuality. In both places, you have the same problem.
Yeah, I wanted you to make that connection even more stridently or in a stronger fashion, the connection between palatability and pornography.
Yes, pornography does something that's parallel to taking the sweet out of the apple, leaving the apple behind, just focusing on the sweetness as just the pleasure that you get from it. Well, what pornography does is it takes sexual pleasure away from the union of a male and female in marriage, and even from the relationship to a male and a female in real life, and focuses simply on the pleasure. And it intensifies it to an ever greater degree. That's why pornography over the last 20 years has gotten more and more unnatural. That is, in order for the brain to have its pleasure center excitable, it can't get the same old, you know, ordinary thing. It has to get something extraordinary. And if you keep feeding it extraordinary things, hyperpalatable things, then it will become addicted to those things. And so what happens in pornography is a continual search for an ever greater hit, in exactly the same way happens with heroin or cocaine. That's why they never stay on, you know, just a little high level. So what you have is the creation of sexual addiction in regard to pornography that is driven by going to ever more unnatural depths to create the high, the hit that the porn addicted person is looking for. And of course, the folks that sell it know that. And it's a multi-billion dollar industry. So the same thing goes as for the food industry, as the porn industry. They're hijacking the pleasure center of the natural human brain and getting it addicted to unnatural forms of pleasure that are measurably self-destructive.
So I have mantle cell lymphoma, and there's a connection likely, although I can't make the connection, between many cancers and what we eat.
Oh, yeah.
And the same thing is true, as you're describing right now, with respect to pornography. So pornography causes all of these unintended side effects, maybe intended side effects, and now you have another industry. So you have a $100 billion cancer industry that needs to be fed. Now we have a new industry. We got the ED industry. So people have been addicted to pornography. As a result of that, they now have ED. Now you have a new industry. And it seems in some way that we don't want to solve the problem, because if we did solve the problem, we'd have economic chaos.
Yeah, yeah. And think if everyone tomorrow, I mean, I'd love this economic chaos, if everyone tomorrow could shut off the porn and think, what is my sexual health? What am I as a human being? And begin to rebuild natural our natural sexuality from becoming so unnatural. There are so many industries tied to it. So much money is made behind the scenes by it's not just Hollywood, and it's not just, you know, shady porn makers in a back room. It's just all over the map. You know, like some of the biggest hotel chains are also the biggest makers of porn. So it's all over the map. You see, once again, if we return to sexual health, billions and billions of dollars in the economy would dry up. And just like the food industry, you would see the economic effect. Now, that's the punishment we deserve. You know, this is what you get when you set up your economy on sins. Well, if you don't believe in sin and you don't believe in God, then the question of, well, why can't you set up your economy in any way you want? Isn't the economy just about everyone making as much money as we can? You know, well, we are making a lot of money. It's not like we're not. That part's working, but we are making it so feverishly on overconsumption, on sexual self-destruction, and on physical self-destruction. That's not a good sign, and that's not a healthy economy if it's destroying our bodies or our marriages. One of the biggest destroying factors of marriage right now is pornography, but it's destroying maleness as well. And women are going to be hit hard with this. They already are. You can't find a man who isn't addicted to pornography and hence isn't asking of you. Even if he decides to ask you out for a date, a lot of men are just saying, we don't need women. We're just, our pornography is enough. We don't need a real woman. Real women are bothered. A lot of that is happening in significant numbers. But also the toxification of sexuality so that, you know, if men and women are dating, the men, young men too, teenagers, they want the reenactment of porn, which is horrifying and destructive and unnatural. It's not even, you know, porn has been so turned from even natural sexuality that the things that they show and dwell on are simply harmful. And that is invading the world where men and women used to meet to marry. And that's a toxification, too. And women are starting to complain about it, but women are also becoming more and more addicted to porn themselves, perhaps in part because they can't find any men that they would even have anything to do with.
You know, I want to get back to that in a second because there are some questions that are brewing in my mind in this regard, but I don't want to forget something that I want to talk about with you, and that is the labeling we have on food packaging. I go to a health food store and I buy organic foods and all natural on the labels, organic on the labels and so forth. In many ways, this may be misleading.
Unfortunately, it is. It's getting to the point where if you didn't grow it, or you didn't know the person that grew it or produced it, then you don't know whether that label means anything or not, because you can be assured that the food industries have found ways to get around that. So if it says that it's all natural, well, what does that mean? Often you find out it doesn't mean a whole lot. Zero percent trans fat, like, oh yeah, but what else is in it? So even a lot of the organic produce you may get, unless it's grown locally, has been sprayed with things that you really wouldn't want to ingest, but are allowable under the guidelines. And then you just have people who are selling the stuff and it's not real at all. That is, it isn't any more organic than anything else you get. It doesn't have any less toxic sprays on it, but they're quite literally selling it, knowing that it isn't, so they can charge a higher price. My wife showed me this horrible article revealing that the FDA had looked at a lot of these extra supplements in all the big stores. You know, so all the things that you think you're taking for health actually don't have the thing they say in them. Walmart, all the big chains for drugstores. So what you've got is an economy in which people are selling products which people who want to eat healthy food, want to have good supplements, are buying, but they're simply buying the same old thing and they're paying more for it. Now, that tells us something else about the economy. When we have an economy built on farawayness, you can't do that. You need to have local economies so you know the people and know how they produce what you want. Things are shipped in from all over the place. They could have done anything to it, and you don't know. So it doesn't even guarantee it if it says this is organic or this is all natural in the label. You have no idea. And as you say, that's not very funny when you're trying to avoid all the carcinogens that are pumped into the food.
Interestingly enough, you have this predilection to get people involved in nature once again. I mean, we're looking at computer screens, we're addicted to being inside homes, and we're losing touch with nature itself. And there seems to be a connectivity between the fact that we really don't know, well, maybe something like even sludge as fertilizer. I mean, we don't know about these things because we're looking at computer screens, we're indoors, we really don't know how the world works anymore. We don't know nature.
Yeah. And somebody might think, oh, well, that's, you're just talking about the general run of the mill here, most people. And as I point out in defense of nature, no, it's actually scientists who are part of this.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Benjamin Weicker. The left understands the exquisite, delicate harmony of the natural order and why environmental pollution is harmful. The right understands the exquisite, delicate harmony of the human moral order and why moral pollution is harmful. Yet each side refuses to see the other's argument. Dr. Weicker's book, In Defense of Nature, allows both the left and the right to see what the other sees so clearly and how it all fits together, from toxic landfills and global warming to internet addiction and human trafficking. To receive your copy of Benjamin Weicker's In Defense of Nature as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's mind-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. America is at a crossroads. Action is needed, but not just any action. We don't need Christians merely attempting to do their best. We need soberly informed Christians doing what is genuinely strategic. The future doesn't just happen. It is created by people committed to envisioning and facilitating specific outcomes in society. The key is not simply to know what is coming, but to determine how to respond most intelligently and strategically to emerging circumstances. And that's why Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute are offering George Barna's strategic book, America at the Crossroads, in appreciation for your financial partnership. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making and based on two decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken from the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org, equip.org. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank invited ethicist Benjamin Weicker to discuss his book, In Defense of Nature. Well, let's rejoin Hank and Professor Weicker in their conversation.
You have this predilection to get people involved in nature once again. I mean, we're looking at computer screens, we're addicted to being inside homes, and we're losing touch with nature itself. And there seems to be a connectivity between the fact that we really don't know, well, maybe something like even sludge is fertilizer. I mean, we don't know about these things because we're looking at computer screens, we're indoors, we really don't know how the world works anymore. We don't know nature.
Yeah. And somebody might think, oh, well, that's, you're just talking about the general run of the mill here, most people. And as I point out in defense of nature, no, it's actually scientists who are part of this, because science itself used to be studied as actually going out into nature and looking at animals in their habitat, knowing about birds, knowing about the way actual ecologies work, stamping through the fields. Now it's become, over the last, say, 30, 40, 50 years, basically an indoor activity done on the computer screen, manipulating computer programs, or simply believing that the only thing that nature really is a set of chemicals that are put together in different forms. So everything's really reducible to DNA, so you don't need to study actual fish or birds or elk or antelope. You don't need to get actual environmental systems. You simply reduce everything to the effect of DNA. So our natural science itself has become not very natural at all. And that's because it's bought into the materialist reductionist view. The nature out there really isn't real anyway. It's all reducible to molecules and atoms. It's not real. So you have it in science, and you have this kind of abstraction of nature in our daily lives, and it's become epidemic over the last 50 years, certainly over the last 10 with computers and cell phones, but it began with the television. And so I had to confess my sins in the book. And, you know, I couldn't pretend to be the guy that was always out in nature when I was a kid. I was watching the television all for hours and hours and hours. And the result was that I didn't know anything about nature. You know, I was abstracted. But the internet is 1,000 times more intense than that. And we now have a serious amount of scientific literature, much of which I include in defense of nature, on internet addiction. It's not just porn addiction. That's one thing. This is just, I can't get off the internet. I'm always on my phone. I'm always on Facebook. And the world could be crumbling outside of you and you wouldn't even know. And that abstraction from nature is, in a very important way, if I can say this, a Christian heresy. Because creation is the good foundation of revelation. Creation is good. It is the place that we meet God on the natural level as the creator, and both in joy and praise his works. If we're always in a computer game, we're always staring at a computer, we don't have that natural religious appreciation of creation. And environmentalists want to say the same thing too. A lot of them have. We're addicted to the screen. We're not going out into nature. And hence, we don't care what happens to nature. We don't care at all. As long as we get our Doritos and we get our, you know, computer games, we don't care what happens to it. So, again, here's some common ground between the left and the right, between Christians and a largely more secular mindset that affirms strongly environment. We need to become immersed once again in nature and in human nature. We're part of creation, too, that we're abstracted from. We have lost sight even of ourselves.
What do you make of this mad rush into gender fluidity?
Well, think about it. If you spend all your time on a computer, you think that you can manipulate anything to create anything. I mean, that's what you do on a computer, and you visually can literally make one universe, or you can transform something into something else. Okay, well, you also live in a culture in which you believe that at bottom, nothing, there's no real natural order except the chemical order. And so, well, bodies are made of chemicals and certain kinds of order and organs and so on. We can manipulate those as well. And so the belief that there's no natural order, even for human sexuality, is the foundation of our attempt now to say, well, there isn't a natural order of sexuality. Sexuality is what you make it. Just like we can make things in our computers any way we want, we can use our computers and our understanding of chemical biology and any of our other sciences that would be of help to literally make ourselves any gender we want. And so the notion that our gender is fluid is part of this larger belief that nature itself doesn't have an order and we could do anything we want with it. Now, the good news is, I hope, if we can get him to see this, the left doesn't really believe that about nature. They want to say, wait a second, you can't just do whatever you want. Nature has its own order that you shouldn't violate. And you don't generally see the left and the environmental movement saying that gender is whatever animals want it to be. They realize that it's really the foundation of their being able to live and carry on their species. So it's, oddly enough, very definite in the animal world, but we're trying to make it indefinite in the human world. And that should appear to the left as an obvious contradiction, but it yet hasn't, because they want to carry out the full sexual revolution, and that means that you should be able to define gender as well. And that's what's going on.
I've always wanted to talk to you about climate change. We hear so much about CO2. It's a pernicious, evil, destructive force. We have to do whatever we can to combat it. Is that really true with respect to CO2?
Well, I'm going to tell you a dirty secret. I've been exhaling for this whole interview. And I'll bet on your end you have that dirty secret as well. Yeah, it's and weirdly enough, the plants outside, probably my tomato plants, are inhaling a lot of CO2 as they photosynthesize. So they're oddly enough cleaning that up. So I think we're probably about even here, and that's a lesson in where CO2 really exists naturally. That is, it isn't just a global greenhouse gas. It's essential to carrying on life. It's not a toxin. I live in an area of the country in which downriver on the Ohio River, they belch toxins in the air. Sulfur dioxide, that's a toxin. That's pollution. But CO2 is not pollution. So it's a misrepresentation to pretend that it is. Secondly, the question of CO2 as a greenhouse gas, I put this in an entirely new context. In defense of nature, I hope, for heaven's sake, someone will listen to it, is that if you really look at the argument about CO2, it's this. The problem with CO2 in the atmosphere is you got to get it just right. If you have too little, then it will be too cold on the Earth. If you have too much, it'll be too warm. So it's just rightness. And what we find out is that just rightness of the amount of CO2 in our atmosphere is something that allows our planet to be habitable for complex life. And now this begins to sound like the strong anthropic argument. And I treated this in Meaningful World as well, that shows you that all the way back to the Big Bang and all the way down to the way our planet works, you've got wonderful but delicate, complex order that really couldn't have been as a result of chance, because it's so wonderfully precise. And the amount of CO2 in our atmosphere is very small, something like 0.04%, not even 1%. And what the global warming people are saying is, well, gosh, if it rises much higher, we're going to cook. And I want to take that seriously because it's true. If you could raise it really, really high, we would cook. And a sign of this is Venus, the planet Venus, has like 96% CO2 in its atmosphere, and it's very unpleasantly hot there. But we have a small amount in our atmosphere, and it's regulated by so many other things, so many other parameters, so many other aspects of the Earth's wonderful biosphere, that the question of whether we can cause it, the greenhouse gas CO2, to increase so much that we boil to death, is an open question. Yes, let's argue about it, but weirdly enough, the Earth has a kind of a thermostatic control that washes CO2 out of the atmosphere when too much gets there. Very simple, beautiful. It rains. I mean, that's what causes CO2 to wash out of the atmosphere. If it gets hotter, and you have too much CO2 in the atmosphere and it gets hotter, it rains, it washes it out. And that's what keeps the Earth's temperature stable. So what I don't like about the global warming folk is they pretend that, first of all, CO2 is a kind of a toxin, and secondly, that there's nothing else that contributes to a stable thermostatic equilibrium in regard to our temperature, so that even putting a little more CO2 in the atmosphere is going to bring us over the brink. That's not true. So standing back from the whole fight about global warming, we can take seriously the question about whether there is global warming, but we need to bring in all of the information. And I think that the left can be blamed for not allowing that information to in the conversation. If you don't agree that we're on the brink of disaster, you're not allowed to talk. And that's not scientific. That's not rational. So I'm not dismissing global warming at all, but saying, you know, we need to have a wider, deeper talk about it. And I think the global warming chapter is the longest one in the book because it's such a touchy issue.
It is a touchy issue. And I think back to, I was born in 1950, so this was fairly current. I guess I was in my 20s when I was reading about the looming ice age.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether we shouldn't be more concerned about a looming ice age today than we are about global warming.
Well, one of the things that they don't want to talk about, the global warming enthusiasts, is that, you know, for example, their large-scale climatic cycles that have been going on for hundreds of thousands, even millions of years. So, for example, we pretty much have a predictable cycle of 100,000 years of ice ages, and then you have like 10,000 years of warming period. And we're in a 10,000-year warming period now. In fact, we're coming to the end of it. Well, you know, if you look at the cycles, and not just the last 100 years of temperatures like they tend to do, but let's look at the last 8 million years of temperatures. Well, then you see these big, you know, large-scale variations, and it looks, when you look at that, as if we're about to enter another ice age, and you add to that variations in regard to the solar energy output, that is from the sun, and it looks like we're about to go toward what's called a Maunder minimum, which means simply that you have so little sunspot activity that it's like entering a mini ice age.
We'll pick up Hank's conversation with Professor Benjamin Weicker in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth, and receive your copy of Benjamin Weicker's book, In Defense of Nature, The Catholic Unity of Environmental, Economic, and Moral Ecology, as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with ethicist Benjamin Weicker on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making and based on 2 decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken? From the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Equip.org. America is at a crossroads. Action is needed, but not just any action. We don't need Christians merely attempting to do their best. We need soberly informed Christians doing what is genuinely strategic. The future doesn't just happen. It is created by people committed to envisioning and facilitating specific outcomes in society. The key is not simply to know what is coming, but to determine how to respond most intelligently and strategically to emerging circumstances. And that's why Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute are offering George Barna's strategic book, America at the Crossroads, in appreciation for your financial partnership. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Welcome back to the special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank invited ethicist Benjamin Weicker to discuss his book, In Defense of Nature. Well, let's rejoin the conversation as Dr. Weicker explains that we may be due, actually, for another ice age.
We pretty much have a predictable cycle of 100,000 years of ice ages, and then you have like 10,000 years of warming period. And we're in a 10,000-year warming period now. In fact, we're coming to the end of it. Well, you know, if you look at the cycles, and you know, not just the last 100 years of temperatures like they tend to do, but let's look at the last 8 million years of temperatures. Well, then you see these big, you know, large-scale variations, and it looks, when you look at that, as if we're about to enter another ice age, and you add to that variations in regard to the solar energy output, that is from the sun, and it looks like we're about to go toward what's called a Maunder minimum, which means simply that you have so little sunspot activity that it's like entering a mini ice age. And we're seeing some predictions that might be like 2030, that we might hit another minimum And then we would repeat a kind of ice age, the mini ice age that gripped Europe after the Middle Ages up until the 1700s, where it's really cold, not to the point where I'm going to have a glacier come through Ohio, but the summer seasons are going to be short enough that we could have crop failures, as they did during the mini ice age after the Middle Ages. So if you try to bring in those things, unfortunately, in the debate, you're shouted out as, you know, some kind of an irrational, immoral being. Well, that's no way to carry on a discussion that's basically scientific. Everything I said is scientifically verifiable, or at least should be part of the debate. And if these things are true, then the exact opposite will result. That is, we're actually about to enter a colder period in which more CO2 would be beneficial. Now, CO2, again, is not a pollutant, so that's not a problem, but this is an open debate. If we can keep it open and not scream at each other, that'll be a lot better.
You know, I'm sure we're going to have another discussion somewhere down the line, but I can't help but ask you a question about a book that you autographed to me many years ago. 10 books that screwed up the world. I mean, obviously, a discussion on that book would take another couple of hours, but at least a little overview from you for those listening in.
Yeah, that's happily one of my most popular books, and it was an attempt to get people to understand that ideas have consequences, and a lot of the problems that we experience now have to do with bad ideas that entered, as it were, sort of the intellectual mainstream centuries ago and have come to fruition in ways that are destructive. So I'm just going to quickly name some of them so hearers can know what kinds of things we're talking about. So I look at Machiavelli's The Prince, which was written in the beginning of the 1500s. And he's the first great modern atheist, and he's the first one to understand what that meant. It meant there is no good and evil, and you can do whatever you want. Well, he's the great founder of the 20th century totalitarian movements, that there's no God, and so all that matters is power and how effectively you use it. Hundreds of millions of people died because of that. That's a toxic idea. So Rene Descartes' Discourse on Method, he was the one that argued that we should root certainty in the human intellect itself rather than in nature. Well, you can see, just to link it to something we talked about just a bit ago, it's really what happens when you, you know, we follow Descartes, you create a culture in which you're sort of staring at yourself and your own creations all the time, and you believe that you're the source of order and certainty in the universe. Well, that's dangerous. You know, it's dangerous for the environment if you think you can do whatever you want to the environment, or if you can do whatever you want to human nature. We got Hobbes' Leviathan, another one, Rousseau's Discourse on the Origin and Foundations of Inequality Among Men. He's really a great grandfather of both the sexual revolution and Marxism. So I deal with Marxism as well, Marx's Manifesto of the Communist Party. I deal with Mill's Utilitarianism, Charles Darwin's The Descent of Man. Everyone should read that book, by the way, because Charles Darwin is really founding the modern eugenics movement in that, and in his own words, and I quote him extensively so people can see, yeah, that's where it came from. And one of the places that it bore fruit was, or several of the places, other books I deal with, Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, Nietzsche's Beyond Good and Evil, Margaret Sanger's The Pivot of Civilization, all in one way or another deal with the belief that there isn't any good and evil intrinsic to things. There is just a future that we make by eliminating the weak and allowing the strong to breed. And that comes right from Darwin. So I deal with several others, but that's sort of an overview of the ones that I deal with that were immensely influential in distorting the culture.
No, I actually met you as a result of A Meaningful World, How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature. So I want to end this dialogue with you by just another touch of this. I mean, we live in a meaningful world, but all the while, there are scientists that are speculating that the Earth is an insignificant speck of soil aimlessly adrift in a meaningless universe. And that has dramatic ramifications on how individuals live their life in the world at this present time.
Yes. I mean, it's basically pseudoscience-based nihilism. And when people take it seriously, there are no limits to their actions. In other words, look, life is meaningless anyway. If there's going to be any meaning or order or good and evil, I'm going to create it. I'm going to make what I want. And there aren't any real limits to that. So it creates a kind of nihilism, but also one which violates nature and human nature and disregards any kind of moral limits. So it's not innocuous. And the problem with it is not only that it's harmful, but it's scientifically false, that it actually harms our intellect to believe it because it's not true. And in Meaningful World, I wrote this with Jonathan Witt, we go through the sciences and show, in fact, the truth is what science reveals is that the universe is wonderfully, deeply intelligible on level after level. And what that means is that it must be that it has an intelligent source. You don't get that many layers of intelligibility of a world quite literally set up so that human beings can understand it and think then that the universe happened by chance. It's not possible. And it's irrational to believe it. And so what I hope in the meaningful world in writing this book was we can reconstruct science so that it's better science. It's deeper science, and it discovers more, and it shows us in ever greater detail how meaningful, how intelligible, how wonderfully ordered the world is. Now, that certainly supports Christianity. But notice it's a scientific argument. I never had to go outside of science to make it, but it shows once again that nature supports revelation.
So I guess the final thing I want to talk about, and maybe this is a summation to our discussion, is we've kicked over the can of worms and we see all of the problems. And so often I say on the Bible Answer Man broadcast and elsewhere that the real problem ultimately is not the pagan world, because pagans are simply exercising their job description. What else would they do? The real problem is Christians not being salt and light. And so in light of that, maybe a couple of words to those listening in about how we should live in the present circumstances that we find ourselves in.
Wow. I think I can answer that in a short enough way. The situation we're in, first of all, has to be understood deeply. One of the things that I find again and again is, and I find it myself too, is I didn't really understand the situation, and so I was contributing to the problem rather than to the solution. So one of the first things I tell my students is, I know you guys are revved up. I teach at Franciscan University. They are revved up with a new evangelization. But I tell them, don't just do something, stand there. And listen and read and clarify the actual situation that we're dealing with. Because what you often find is that they mix and match Christian notions and beliefs with what were really originally anti-Christian notions and beliefs, because the culture is so malformed. And so one of the first things we have to get is far greater clarity about it. You know, what we live in a culture largely defined by anti-Christian assumptions. We need to understand that deeply, and then we need to understand what are the Christian arguments and assumptions before we do anything. Otherwise, we might be very well doing the wrong thing. Even our charity may not be real charity if we're doing the wrong thing out of just ignorance. So the first thing is we have to literally clean up our intellectual landscape and also our moral landscape, all the while evangelizing by how we treat ourselves and others. That is, Christians always have the awful burden, which I feel every day. You can't just have the right arguments. You have to live the right arguments. And if you don't live the right arguments, then nobody's going to believe the theological and moral arguments you make. So, again, as with the Christians in the pagan world, we have to be the light, quite literally, in the culture. As the culture gets darker and darker, shine forth all the more.
Benjamin Weicker, he has written some of my favorite books, 10 books that screwed up the world. It's at the top of the list, A Meaningful World, How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature, In Defense of Nature, The Catholic Unity of Environmental, Economic, and Moral Ecology. And then your latest work is what again?
It will be coming out, as I say, I think in August 28th, and it is called The Reformation 500 Years Later, 12 Things You Need to Know.
I can't wait to read that book. And remember, every single discussion with people like Benjamin Weicker can get out to the broad public when you get involved yourself, not only by listening, but subscribing, rating, reviewing, and most of all, sharing. So there are easy ways for you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute by letting people know about the Hank Unplugged podcast. We want to put this podcast in the top of the religion and spirituality platform on iTunes and elsewhere. So please be involved in the process. And Benjamin, thank you so much for the work that you do, for the time that you've spent with us, and for the difference you're making for time and for eternity.
Well, I certainly appreciate it, and it is always an honor to be on your show. It is one of the best, and it deserves to be at the top. And so I'm hoping and praying that we'll be there very soon.
Nice talking to you. We're out of time for this edition of Hank Unplugged. Look forward to seeing you next time with more.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with ethicist Benjamin Weicker in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift Benjamin Weicker's book, In Defense of Nature, or any of the other resources mentioned on the broadcast today, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. America is at a crossroads. Action is needed, but not just any action. We don't need Christians merely attempting to do their best. We need soberly informed Christians doing what is genuinely strategic. The future doesn't just happen. It is created by people committed to envisioning and facilitating specific outcomes in society. The key is not simply to know what is coming, but to determine how to respond most intelligently and strategically to emerging circumstances. And that's why Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute are offering George Barna's strategic book, America at the Crossroads, in appreciation for your financial partnership. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making and based on two decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken? From the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Equip.org.